You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody. My name is Kyle, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. I'm joined here by my co-host this week, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Greetings.
Greetings. You don't have any poetry ready for us this week?
Greetings is poetry, Kyle.
Okay. Leave me alone. And who's that person over there laughing? We've got Valter. Hello, Valter.
Hello. I apologize about my voice. It's a bit more raspy than usual.
Valter's just been partying so hard. Good times.
Gang's all here.
Yeah, we're back.
I know, right? After 2 weeks of missing one of you guys, we are all together here. We're wrapping it up for June, which means that we're actually going to be talking about the CivCast Challenge, which I have to say, I am totally blown away because I think, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but we may have the highest participation rate than we've ever had in the past. At least people really came out in droves all month submitting things constantly. What's your thoughts on this?
No, 100%. Yeah, this is the most participated challenge that I've seen. It's impressive. So either we have more listeners, which is possible. We have more people who were interested in the challenge, also possible. Or y'all just had a lot more time on your hands, also possible.
Choose one of the above. Hey, actually, you know what? That's a good point, though. It is summer, and I wonder if that contributed to anyone else being able to have some more time to pick it up. Because even if you're not someone that's in school, college, etc., I know sometimes work schedules are a bit lighter in the summer. So who knows? That could have contributed to it. But we got some awesome ones. Valter, at the beginning of the month, called out a little note that when founding a religion in here, you need to name it. If you're going to go Sumerian, you're going to do religious, you need to name it something along the lines of... What was it?
Brogamesh.
And yeah. Some people took it to the extreme. So how about I recap really quickly what the challenge actually was. So you were playing either Norway or Sumeria. And if you were going Norway, you had to go with a science victory. If you were going Sumeria, you were going with a religious victory. Let's see. Anything else to call out? If you were doing Norway, you're on Pangaea. If you're doing Sumeria, you're on islands. But otherwise, pretty standard stuff there, and it just wrapped up yesterday. So, Dan, tell us, who do we have kicking butt this month?
Well, everyone. I think that it's been a really fantastic month, as we were talking about, and the grand total of folks, not including Voucher, because I mean, he's not a real person, the grand total of people who I saw submitted on Reddit was 10. So that's really cool. So I'm not going to be able to run through each of your fantastic little scenarios in depth, but what I have done is I have recorded down each of your victory conditions, sieves, turn victory number, and just a little bit of a nugget from each of you that adds a little bit of color to your victory. So we'll start, we'll kind of go in, I think, maybe... What order do we want to go in? Time order, or do we want to go in actual victory order and kind of wind it down to the person who won?
Let's maybe go in victory order, I think.
Okay. Yeah, well, then the first person I say is probably going to feel very bad about themselves. So first up, we have Durgrick, who I don't believe has submitted to the CivCast Challenge before. And he submitted really early on in the month. So his is one of the first ones that I remember seeing. And he did the Norway game. He did the Norway science victory on Pangaea on turn 349. And one neat little nugget that I was able to find from his victory, he earned the Varangian Guard achievement during this victory, which I believe, is that just like victory from Norway in general? Is that what that achievement is?
Win a game as Norway.
Okay, yeah. So I guess he hadn't really played Norway before, which, hey, cool. See, that's the point of a CivCast Challenge.
Exactly.
We want y'all playing stuff that you haven't played before. So congrats to Durgrick. Looked like that was a fun game. Our good buddy VT Matt was, I think, the first person to submit early on in the month. He was victorious on turn 342, also with Norway, science, and Pangaea. He said that it was a peaceful and warless game where the only war that was conducted was in the ancient age between he and Spain when he declared war to capture a settler. Other than that, he had no battles, no conflict whatsoever, which I think we could all agree is an anomaly. That I don't think that's ever happened to me. His main opponent in the game, it was Greece, who was also grinding hard for a science victory. Greece is Pericles, which is interesting. Greece is Pericles for science, not something that I would inherently go for, but nonetheless. After that, in order, we have turn 336, a Norway victory from Zoom WSU, who participates in these on a monthly basis. He said it was a very difficult challenge. He never had a chance to build the unique unit or the unique building, Stave Church, which I guess kind of makes sense because you're not going to get a long boat on Pangaea, and Stave Church is not really inherently beneficial to the science victory. He kind of blames the AI a bit here. He says in his post that the AI was, quote, terrible. For instance, he was about to lose, and then the Legions sued for peace when they were one turn away from taking his capital.
Wow.
So, you know, I would agree with him there that the AI does still have some kinks that hopefully get worked out in instances like that when he should have lost. Our good buddy Jonker, he was victorious on turn 329, also with Norway Science. We're getting a lot of the Norway Science victories, which I'm glad to see. I thought that would be a really fun one for people. He actually tried playing the Gilgamesh Religious Victory early on, and he said that that one was really difficult for whatever reason, maybe map type. I don't think really specify in the post why it was inherently difficult, but he was victorious on turn 329 with Norway Science. And Jonker, you always participate in these, so thank you for doing it again. After he, we will bump down to someone who I believe is new and whose name I'm definitely going to mispronounce, and that is R. Karaistlin. I feel like that's like Gaelic or something, and I should be like leaving out half the letters in my pronunciation.
We'll have to see. Write us in. Let us know how to pronounce your name.
Exactly, yeah. But nonetheless, this person was victorious on turn 321 with Sumeria and with our religious victory, which I was really glad to see. This is our first of the religious victories. And actually, you're going to see that the folks who did the Sumeria religious victory tended to be victorious a lot quicker than the Norway Science victory, which probably has something to do with just the inherent mechanics of the victory type.
Yeah.
Moving on down from there, we have, let me do math in my head here, carry the one, Hormiga 23, who was victorious on turn 293 in the Norway Science victory. Looked like that was actually a much more challenging game than some of these science victories that I've seen, judging by Hormiga's post, which I encourage you to take a look at on the Reddit, because I believe that their post, let me just find it here. I lost it. 1 second.
You're fine. Thanks for the people joining us on Mixer. I'm seeing some people hop in there. Hi, guys.
Cool. So we got a picture here from Hormiga talking about how China was a pain the whole game and had to go head to head with them. And they also use a really cool mod that I haven't used, which R. Karaistlin interacted with them and asked them about. By the way, it's really cool when you guys interact with each other on Reddit. It makes us feel like we're a little community.
Oh, definitely.
Hormiga was using CQUI. Actually, I do know CQUI. I don't know how I'm talking about. I use CQUI and Civ 5. And I need. Should probably download it for Civ 6.
You really should.
I should. Yeah, good call. After that, we'll move on to Caleb the Young, who I believe we talked about last week.
We did.
Victorious on turn 275 in the Sumeria religious victory with, I think I could safely say, his fantastic religion of bromanity. And I really encourage you folks to hop on the Reddit and check out his post, because it's pretty meme-tastic.
It is pretty meme-tastic.
It's beautiful. I was in the bus, riding the bus, listening to the episode last week, and it was so amazing. It made me so happy to hear that he also named all his cities in that way as well. Thank you very much. You have a special place in my heart right now.
You've done Valtra a great service.
You really have.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's the kind of stuff that we love, so that's really cool. Bouncing down from Caleb here, Wimbledog, our buddy there, who posted a really cool tweet yesterday of him listening to the Civcast while in the shadow of our favorite wonder, Big Ben, which is really awesome. He did the Norway Science victory, and I believe on turn 250, his Norway Science victory was the best of all of them. And he actually joined Reddit just to share with us, because it's funny. I think Wimbledog, he joined Twitter just to start sharing with us. Aww. And then I think we were like, screw Twitter. And now he joins Reddit just to share with us. So you, my friend, are a dedicated listener, and we appreciate that. Sorry that we keep bouncing you back and forth between platforms.
We'll make up our mind one of these days. But I think this goes to show, like, Dan, you're still, like, this is a massive list. Like, I think the Reddit portion of it is paying off like we wanted it to. You know, I think, like, yeah, you guys said, you were getting people talking to one another there. And it just ultimately seems like we're getting a lot of sharing. So I chalk it up as a win. Thanks, Wimbledog, for coming
right
with.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that it's really cool. Plus, it allows people to put these fantastic long posts about it, right?
Yeah.
So, so Wimbledog David wins the Norway half of the challenge. But there are two more folks who had quicker games. Pendon, who I believe shared with us a couple times over the course of the month and last month, was victorious on turn 244 with Sumeria. He or she failed 5 times before success.
Aww, so, that's dedication.
You know, 100%. So he or she must have really enjoyed the scenario construction to play it 6 times. I'm pretty sure after one loss, I'd be like, screw this, and like throw my keyboard across the room. But I guess I'm, you know, temperamental. It's the Scott in me.
I also love the way he's naming the units. Like, it starts with the donkey cart.
Uh-huh.
You go to knights, thanks, and then death.
That's right. Yeah, I should have noted that down. That was hilarious too.
That's so fun. Yeah. Especially the donkey cart instead of war cart. That's really good. I love it.
My favorite
donkey
weapon.
Cart, yeah, that's amazing. I love our community, man. They're so awesome. But the overall victor. By a significant margin, and you know, this person probably has the funnest, that's not a word,
most fun
of all of the Sidcast challenge posts this month, and it's someone who I don't think we've interacted with before, at least I personally haven't, and I'm probably pronouncing it Vecrocat,
we're sorry, putting you through some real hoops here, Dan.
There's a T in there. Vectorcat, I think.
Vectorcat. Oh, man. See, I probably just mistyped it. Vectorcat. That's just sounds like a futuristic cat who's maybe wearing one of those, like eye sets, like Data from Star Trek does.
Oh, there you go.
Vectorcat. Turn 162 was victorious with a Sumeria religious victory. And I think easily the best part of this is the fact that Vectorcat named their religion Church of the Swole.
Wow.
And if that's kind of lost in translation for you, Swole is what gym rats call themselves after they've been working out, and their muscles are all bulgy and stuff. They're, oh, bro, I'm so swole. So I thought that was just absolutely genius and hilarious when I read that, which I just read today.
Wow.
It was really well done. Vectorcat also has a really cool post, too, where he or she kind of gives us a breakdown turn by turn of some highlights of the game, such as how on turn 54 they founded the Church of the Swole. And actually, they because the game was so short, it's really cool to see England and Australia both succumb to the Church of the Swole in the same turn. 2 turns later, Poland bowed to the Church of the Swole. So it's he must have just been pouring out the converts.
There had never been so many gyms opened at once.
Yeah, but I've been talking too much. I'll pass it back over to you guys. All in all, I am thoroughly impressed with our community. 10 folks who submitted. We are humbled and grateful for your participation.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. Super, super happy with all of that awesome, awesome, you know, dedication to the game. I mean, people playing it multiple times over, people spending all that time to write up these awesome posts. And I think Reddit is the perfect place for it. It seems like you guys are really getting in there and having fun with it. So remember that we are not announcing new roles this week, but instead next week we will come back to you with some new roles for July's challenge. At that point, you guys can get started and you'll have another month to do it. Thank you again. And now we're kind of, well, twofold. We're going to go into our main topic of this week, which is going to be talking about Civilization V, because you guys have asked us to take a look at older games in more detail. And as Dan and I were talking about last week, we surpassed our awesome Patreon goal there. You guys really helped us get it over that goal. And so we're now live streaming the show. We thought, well, what can we do next? I know we talked about this briefly last week, but once we hit the next goal, I'm going to be live streaming older Civ games because, again, popular request. So hope that you guys are interested in that. If you are, head over to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Civcast, and donate whatever you would like. You know, anything helps, and you're not required to. We're always here for you guys, posting content every week. But let's dive into this Civ 5 discussion. Dan, this was pretty much your idea. So I'll set us up a little bit here because you just talked and, you know, went into a huge description of those guys. So I thought maybe I would set us up with what Civ 5, what is that game? Has anyone ever here heard of Civ 5? Oh, I have. And it was a massive change to the franchise in a very positive way. I mean, this is one of those games that has the most positive reviews for it in its little corner of history for gaming. I mean, this has been ranked on so many people's top charts when it comes to video game journalists that rave that Civ 5 is like a cornerstone of strategy gaming. So what we actually had introduced, this game came out in 2010, and it introduced a couple new unique features that the previous Civ games had not had. Starting us off, and correct me if any of these are wrong, I don't totally remember Civ 4, but I'm taking it from the Wikia, and I trust in them. But it says that we got new features, including a unique gameplay ability, meaning each civilization has a unique ability, which provides unique bonuses that are geared towards a certain victory condition. We got unique units. Each civilization has at least one unique unit, and there are also some civilizations with a second unique unit. Unique buildings or improvements. Many civs also have unique buildings and some that have a unique improvement instead. This is possible if a given civilization only has one unique unit. They might have gotten some sort of trade-off there. And starting biases were introduced, where many civilizations tend to favor a particular type of terrain for their homeland. So with all of those things added in, we really see what has now become Civilization VI out of that. They took some of the best perks from it and moved it, evolved it, and I don't think they really took any of those away. Can you guys think of any of those? We still have the buildings and improvements. We still have the unique units. We have the gameplay abilities and starting bias. So it looks like all of those things made the cut. Pretty cool that all that stuff made it over here. I guess maybe we can start this conversation out by just kind of going round robin. Valter, if you want to start with this one and just kind of say, like, what maybe is the thing that stood out to you most about Civ 5 versus, you know, where we stand now with Civ 6, or, you know, best memory, whatever you want to talk about.
So the biggest change from Civ 4 to Civ 5 was the single unit per tile thing. And I really hated Civ 5 in the beginning. And after the Brave New World expansion, I only started picking it up again, even after I was like super into Civ 4. I just kept playing Civ 4. But what I liked a lot about Civ 5, and I think in Civ 5 was done better than it is in Civ 6, is the way that you spend your culture. Mm-hmm. They now have like the culture tree, which I like, but I really, really like the Civ 5, like you choose a specific policy kind of thing with its own kind of small tech tree in there where you unlocked those bits and pieces and eventually actually start getting an ideology as well and unlocked more inside the that ideology, which was helping you. The certain ideologies were better for certain victory types and stuff like that. I really liked that system, and I kind of missed that a little bit in Civ 6. But yeah, I like Civ 6 system as well, and maybe we should go a bit more to more what 5 was. I'm just not that much of a fan of switching my policies out all the time in our government now.
It's funny that you say that, because I actually had that in the notes here, that maybe we could talk about that in a little bit more detail. It's something I feel 25 to 25-75 on, not even 50-50. I'm maybe going against the grain with you, Valter. I'm saying I do miss it. That's the 25% for me. But 75% of me got really burnt out on it towards the end, just because it felt a little bit... it started to get a bit just repetitive overall. I felt like I was starting to kind of min-max the tree in a way, which I don't think is a bad thing. But just interested. Dan, do you have any thoughts on that?
On that specific topic or on things in Civ
you know what?
5
both. Or... How about both, Dan? Do you want to maybe... Mm-hmm. Do you have anything on that topic or where do you stand?
Well, I mean, if possible... I think you guys did a pretty good job of covering it. If possible, I kind of wanted to talk about... The one thing, just bring up the one thing that for me stood out when I remember transition into Civ 5, and that was the introduction of city-states, the concept of which was completely brand new into Civ 5. And I remember my first interactions with city-states being something that kind of along the lines of what Valter was just talking about. I wasn't really crazy with the idea of them at first. They seemed like a hindrance, and they seemed like something that was adding... Wasn't that, like, if I remember correctly, too, the... AI with them and stuff wasn't great at the start. Like they kind of like with Civ 6, they had issues making sure that, you know, the AI was authentic in its motivation and its actions and stuff, and with city state specifically. But that was something that it really, the legacy of which has grown into, I think, a wonderful city state interaction system in Civ 6. So for me, that's something that I remember as standing out really starkly in my first playthroughs of Civ 5.
Absolutely. Now, do you have any thoughts? City-states were a very, very big change in there. But do you have any continuing thoughts on the cultural thing before we kind of go on that, Dan? Do you stand in this debate? I'm curious.
Well, okay. So what's the debate at hand here? Spell the two sides for me.
The debate at hand, and I don't think it's not a mortal fight to the death here, but my take on it, Valter's saying he's, I think, a little less of a fan of the policies currently because you swap them out a bit too much. And then my stance on these, I'm trying to show it here on screen. I cannot find a good picture that I really like. But of the older cultural tree, I found it a little bit repetitive because they didn't change and you are basically just checking a box. I love talent trees like... any good MMO player, but I found that I was always doing the same tree. Do you like the new policy system or are you a fan of the cultural talent tree style?
I'm going to be really, really Canadian here and say both. I'm going to go right in the middle and be neutral. I really did like the system in Civ 5. Certainly doesn't have the complexity of Civ 6, which I think is, something that we can all agree on. And I do agree with you, Kyle, and with what you were saying before, that it's repetitive and you find yourself kind of pigeonholing to the same kind of things. I know that I basically went for the exact same path when I was doing it, which was, refresh my memory here, the two options at the very start are what again?
Tradition and liberty.
Yeah. I always went liberty. I feel like all the time I went liberty. Liberty is the one where you're going wide, right? And tradition's where you're
Correct.
Going tall.
Technically.
Yeah, it kind of is, but I always went tradition and wide, so.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough.
You're special, though. You're
fair
special.
Enough.
So.
I am.
Guys, this is bad. I mean, I still remember exactly, like, okay, you rush a tradition here because you want, if you want a strong capital city, and then you can branch out to liberty if you're going to start, once your empire starts expanding. This is, like, bringing me back, guys. I'm having Civ 5 trauma.
Yeah, actually, looking at this right now, I haven't played it in probably about a year or so. Looking at it is definitely triggering me a bit.
I've remembered, like, the day of yesterday.
Aww.
The thing is with the new system is, like, UNX served them for a couple of years, and then you're like, oh, we're done with serfdom. Let's get it away. So that in 200 years from now, we can bring back serfdom for a couple of years again, and then throw it away again, because we had our bonuses off it. That's just not how things work. And I, with the talent tree, as you aptly named it, it's way more like you build up your civilization's values and traditions through culture, and those stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that a lot better in that kind of way. I do love the tech tree, and in some way that you can say that is the way your values and traditions go, but the willy-nilliness of the policies I'm not that much of a fan of that, unfortunately.
That's fair. I think you're definitely getting to something there, because by no means, I don't want anyone coming away thinking I despise this system. I actually really, really, really love talent trees. Like, I'm kind of mad that, like, World of Warcraft and those games have moved further away from them. Like, I really do dig them. But there was something about this that I was always trying to find mods to spice this tree up. There were a couple good ones out there, actually. But that was kind of the thing for me is, had there been even more mods to spice it up in a good way and actually be quality and make good changes, I probably could have continued with the system. But for Valtryk, for as much as I agree with you that those policies do get a little wonky in Civ 6, and the fact that you are changing them, the historical accuracy gets further from the truth. I just can't get over the fact that so many games, and this is Beyond Earth as well, so many games, I was rushing a particular level of it, and then it was always the same. It was like a rinse and repeat. Yeah. I was like, I have to go down to get this one thing, and then I don't know. It didn't give me too much replayability, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, to that point, I do think that rationalism in the base game vanilla experience was too OP. Whatever would happen, I would take rationalism, because that 10% extra science is what I want. But like you... Sorry, what?
And the porcelain tower that you can get from rationalism.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, rationalism was a no-brainer for me. And the rest, it depended on the game. I like tradition, even when I'm going wide. But honor is also really, really fun. And if I wanted to do a strong religious game, then I'd definitely go piety. Aestheticism and patronage all have their uses. So does commerce. So there is a lot, depending on just how you want to play. And I tend to play differently based upon the civilization that I play. I felt there were enough options in that I could spice it up every now and then.
Fair.
And yeah, I also just sometimes you would just do the opener of one of the trees and then just go to a completely different tree, just one of that opener.
Well, and I think something to note is, you guys said this, I mean, these unlocked wonders too, you know, the ability to do things like that in the game that if you didn't go with a certain ideology here, you couldn't actually build something specific. Like, was it Honor that did the Statue of Zeus or something? I played so many mods towards the end, I'm starting to question the reality, like what was real and what was unofficial. But that changed
things up. Tradition
was
the Hanging Gardens. Uh-huh. Liberty was...
Pyramids?
No. I think I don't remember.
Honor, I think it was pyramids. Yeah.
Honor was the Statue of Zeus. Piety was the Mosque of Deji, something like that.
Mm. Yeah.
Patronage was the Forbidden City. Aestheticism was the Uffizi. Then you had commercialism, which was for the Big Ben. Exploration. I don't remember that one. And
the Louvre.
Ah, right, the Louvre. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you had rationalism, which did indeed the Leaning Tower. Oh, no, the Porcelain Tower.
Yeah, to this end, I mean, Valtryk, you made an interesting comment. You said that, you know, you could only put one, there'd be times where, you know, you would just put one point in one of the individual trees or whatever that get its little bonus. I always felt like anytime I actually took the time to put points into the trees, I felt like this sunk cost fallacy into it. I'd be like, I have to go with the whole tree. And then if you're looking at something like commerce, which I'm sure Kyle was big on, right?
Knowing how Kyle's did you know culture or commerce and exploration were my jam? That and then communism came in and crushed everybody.
For sure. And getting Big Ben was beneficial. And something like, I'm just looking at the tree right now, so don't think for a second that I'm remembering all this. Protectionism, where you get +2 happiness from each luxury resource, or entrepreneurship, where great merchants are going 25% faster. You're like, oh, yeah, those are fantastic. But then I distinctly remember the mercenary army one, which allows the purchasing of lands connects. I could never justify that. It's so useless. I don't know if I ever built one of those lands connect things.
Nope.
I don't even know what they are. Nope. Are they boats?
No, they're melee units with pikes, right?
You don't know what a lands connect is? Oh, Dan.
Yeah, Dan, don't you have them everywhere up there?
You're an historian, man. You should know at least that.
That's fair. No, that's fair. I just don't know the name. I don't recognize.
Here, this is a Landsknecht.
Maybe it's because, literally, Landsknecht is a Dutch term as well. It sounds Dutch. It's a German kind of mercenary unit.
Ah, yeah, see, there it is. And I mean, Dutch history, math.
Oh, burn. Shots fired.
I heard your historical minute last episode, and you were talking about the Dutch partially.
Yeah, buddy. They were the reason that Peter the Great was as great as he was.
Yeah, probably.
But so, wait, I want to kind of go back. I like the point that you were going on there, Dan, which is that you're trying to get this end goal, that each of these policy trees that we were looking at has an end goal, like commerce is adopting all policies in the commerce tree will grant plus one gold from every trading post. It will also allow the purchase of great merchants with faith in the industrial era. So there was this longer term reason to actually get all the points in a tree. And for every tree, they had all these, you know, different things. Some of them I found to be less useful than others, like exploration, which I often went. You could see antiquity sites that were hidden, but it gave you the purchase of great admirals with faith. Well, I don't really care to do that. But it was interesting. You know, it tried to get you to invest in these, but at the same time, there were some of these perks that people would shun. And there is kind of a min-maxing way to look at these trees. And I think that gave it a little bit of a, I don't know, a little weird cross-section to it, where it's like, I need to get it all, but is the end actually good?
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, the purchasing of fate, great people with fate, is really, really big boon that was at the end of the tree, and that made like such a large part of which tree I would choose to get, because that's why I really, really, really like tradition, because you could buy those great engineers, which mm-hmm. are awesome. So, yeah. I don't know.
So are we overall happy that this that the change has been made, that we're now away from this? Do we wish that in future iterations we would actually go back to a tree like this? Where do people stand on this?
I want to mix the cultural tech tree together with these kinds of policies things, that you evolve your civilization with these kinds of ideas, and that you don't really necessarily willy-nilly just change your policies in your government, but you build like a cultural identity as a nation, which you do through these kinds of talent trees. I would love to go back to that together with the cultural tech tree. That would be perfect for me.
Got it. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, it's different. I think I really like that, actually. That kind of sold me there, what Wouter was saying. I do think that it adds a level of personality and a level of unique spice to your civ if you did have this kind of tree. I think trees were very much a time and place in gaming history, like you're talking about World of Warcraft and stuff. This whole tech tree idea, or not the tech tree idea, sorry, the branching talent tree idea is very mid to late 2000s. But I think I like the way it's done now. I think it's obviously more streamlined now, and you know, the actual social policies themselves are more complex now. The Eureka bonuses I really like and everything like that. But I do think there was something to be said for the I don't know what it is, the fun might be, it's a simple word for it, the fun aspect of chasing your way through one mm-hmm. of these trees and getting to the end and reaping the benefits, because you don't have that in Civ 6. You know, if you pursue one specific avenue or branch of the policy tree, you don't get some big bonus or buff from having done so.
True.
And I think that's something that is missing, that I really did like from the Civ 5 style and approach, which although was a little bit more, I think it's a little bit more simplistic. I think that's safe to say. Mm-hmm. There were some fun little perks to it.
I think you guys are kind of, I don't know if it's just nostalgia or what, but I am kind of coming around. You guys are making very valid points, though, so I'm not going to say it's nostalgia. I'm gonna claim that you two are just that good at convincing me of things. But I do miss it now that...
Definitely.
That's why you guys are here. But I am missing this more and more as we talk about it. And I don't know if you guys really remember in Beyond Earth, but they tried, I think, to spice it up a little bit. I mean, you know, Beyond Earth was just basically a reskin of this, of Civ 5. But they tried to give you those little intermediate bonuses, too. Like, because with all their different tech trees,
they tried
to give you little perks. Like, oh, you got, you know, you put X amount of points in general across the board. Well, now you get some extra affinity points, or now your production's a little bit faster. So they tried to give little micro goals, and I can't think of what the name is for that. But that's, Dan, to what you were just saying, it's kind of a thing in gaming in general, the idea of giving people these little rewards as they go along. And they tried that system, and for whatever, you know, whether they decided as a company that it was better to move to this new system that we've got now with the actual policies, or, you know, if they just wanted to change it all up and see what people thought of a new system, I kind of agree with you guys. I feel like there's maybe a little bit too much change at times in Civ 6 that you really don't feel like you're working for something because you can swap it all out kind of at a whim. But I don't know. I guess I do want it to be somewhere in the middle, like you were saying, Vats. I want some sort of happy medium, and we definitely do have time for that in, you know, future expansions. If they're going to tweak the trees at all, I mean, we could see something that wouldn't be the first time they tweaked a tree like this. I mean, you have to figure in Civ 5, we did not start off with communism, fascism, and or
ideologies.
Well, yes, yes.
Out like they were.
Exactly.
They were just a small talent tree as well.
Yep.
And eventually it became this big pyramid, which I love. That was really good.
It was
a great change.
I wonder if I can find a picture of that. So, you know, I it's like, it's foreseeable. I know we've been talking about how much they could actually change and get away with, like how much of that would be doable versus, you know, breaking the bank per se. But I don't know. I mean, they've done it in the past, and I'm sure we could see something like it in the future.
And a thing which I find kind of strange is, like, they put a lot of emphasis that all the choices that you're going to make in Civ 6, you need to think more about. The choices are going to have more meaning, and there will be more involved, and you will feel the consequences through that of that choice for a longer time in the game. While they, with the cultural thing, they did the exact opposite. They made the choices a lot less relevant.
True.
Because you can now change the policy so quickly. Well, before in Civ 5, if you choose a policy tree, you had to stick kind of with that because in the sunk cost fallacy as well, but also because otherwise you might not get all the benefits. Your choices were much more involved in how you spent your culture on that. So it's kind of like they said they want to make the choices more important, but they did it everywhere except here.
That is a good point. I mean, you're right. From the very start of Civ 6, that was kind of the exact idea. We're going to make all the decisions matter, but you are right. It kind of undermines that theory. Do you think that they use that as some sort of relief valve or release valve for that? That, like, hey, we don't want to make all of their decisions so pivotal. Maybe we can make this thing a little bit more fluid so that they can react to changes better. Dan, got any thoughts on that?
I don't, Wouter, do you want to take that one? I have to think about that one for a second.
Yeah. I think that when they decided they want to go for a cultural tech tree, they needed to revamp that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came up with, in some kind of brainstorm meeting, with the idea that you do more with the government types again. And how do you flesh that out? And, well, we can make, like, government. What does government do? They make policy. So this is how I imagined that meeting went. Governments do policy. We can do something with policy. And you can enact different policies which have different effects. And you can repeal policies and enact other policies. And that's how it eventually evolved. And I don't think they specifically went with, like, we want to get rid of this idea. They just, like, we have now this, we want to go for this cultural tech tree. That's going to be a new innovation in this game. And we need stuff that fits with that. And then this came out kind of naturally, eventually, out of that, which is completely different from what we had before.
Yeah, I think you're very right there. let's see, Copper Cutters chimed in and says, I'm enjoying the discussion. I'm trying to remember what civs I enjoyed playing with. I really like the Shoshone. I think for me, the tree you guys are referring to just became a pattern. I like the variety of the policy card slots now. Copper Cutters is kind of, yeah, that is my thoughts there as well. It's not that I dislike this tree at all. I think he said it in a very, very good way. It became a pattern for me. So I don't know.
I can completely agree with that. And if I were to redesign this, then I would probably go with like building a national identity or something like that based upon every certain milestone you get like a couple of choices of a permanent bonus that you can add to your civilization based upon perhaps what kind of text you've researched, how much time you've spent at war, if you've been peaceful, those kinds of things. Take those things into account, your playstyle until that point in the game, and get a couple of choices of a selected group. And in that way, there is not a specific pattern because every beginning of the game is going to be different. Every middle of the game is going to be different. You will be doing different things based upon which district you're building and everything like that. Build upon that. Build your national identity upon that. You get so much interaction with your own nation. You get a true feeling like this is a nation that I have built from 4000 BC to 2000 AD. And I really like that idea.
I do too. I hope we haven't beaten people over the head with talk of culture changes over the time. This is kind of our first deep dive or even beginning of a dive into looking at Civ 5. I mean, this is kind of a semi-new concept for us. I'm curious to see how we can look at this going forward. And people, let us know if you like us talking about Civ 5 or you want us to focus more on Civ 6, because these are great conversations. I mean, Valter, you're bringing up really good points about how this can affect us going forward and just different points all around of where we changed in the past. And I mean, these make some sweeping changes to your play style. So I don't know. Dan, do you maybe have any last remarks on this? We're getting a little bit short here on time.
Well, I really like the concept Voucher's bringing up. If we're getting short on time, I wanted to really quickly shoot over to diplomatic victory in Civ 5, which obviously isn't something that's in Civ 6 and which I really liked in Civ 5, and kind of ask you guys what your general thoughts on diplomatic victory in Civ 5 were, because for me, it's very rudimentary, I guess you could say, but there was a really fun aspect to it, you know, the currying favor and the getting votes on specific things and all that. I liked it. I felt that it was something that they could expound upon in Civ 6, and I was really disappointed when they didn't have diplomatic victories.
Caveat for that is that they have said that they will bring back the World Council.
Yes.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. Yeah.
It will definitely... I'm 99% sure that it has been said it will not be on release, but we will definitely bring back the World Council in an expansion.
They said that they just need to monitor our play style, basically, and then, you know, see how people are getting to victory conditions and kind of work it in that way. So yes, Voucher, to your point, we do at least have it coming at some point, because I miss it.
I miss it too. I like the influencing of city states that came along with it. The fact that you had certain civs that were tailored, towards a diplomatic victory, like Austria, I remember. It was something that I thought was really well done. And I'm glad to hear what Voucher's saying that they're planning on bringing it back, because it is sorely missed, in my opinion.
I mean, it was a great, we have enough time to kind of talk about this for about 5-10 minutes here. So if you want, Dan, you could go in a little bit further on this. I mean, it's definitely something I miss. It's something I think I've expressed to you guys I feel like is a little bit lacking with the envoys in the game. Like, I feel like there should be more ways to kind of get them in different fashions, or at least they should have maybe different functions slightly. Like, I'm not upset with the system. I just feel like it's the start of one. I feel like it's the bare bones of what we're going to get here. So what were you thinking about, Dan?
Well, I think I was talking about city-states before. I mean, I when I mentioned city-states before, it probably wasn't the right time to talk about it. But now I think it's important to talk about it, because I felt the best function and utility of city-states in Civ 5 was in their usage for diplomatic victories. Because, you know, what I remember distinctly doing when I would pursue diplomatic victories is I would do everything I could to lean on the city-states to make sure that you could get their votes. Like, the performing of the city state quests, I remember, was kind of dry and kind of dull and everything, but was something that I thought was important for diplomatic victories. I remember always pursuing religion so I could spend my religion there, so it was more influential for them. I would protect them. Because you were trying to build up your influence. You're trying to get as many of them on your side for the votes as possible. And I think that that was a really neat way to integrate them, because city-states were such a new concept into the game. I felt like that was such a neat, strategic element to bring into it, was the whole, you want to curry their favor for the voting aspect. And so you want to protect them, you want to interact, and you want to do the things they want you to do. And I felt like the AI towards the end of Civ 5's life cycle was actually doing a really good job themselves of doing that too. Because I remember the AI was really tough. Maybe it was just my interactions, I don't know what your guys' interactions were, but I remember the AI was really tough when it came to diplomatic victories. Like, they pursued them, and sometimes they would pit me to a diplomatic victory. And they did a good job of executing diplomatic victories, I guess I could say, the AI. I'm not sure if you guys agree or disagree with that.
Well, the thing with the diplomatic victory in Civ 5 is that it's not so much a diplomatic victory as it is an economic victory. Because the way that you get your influence with the city states was through cash. So if you have a really strong economy, you just buy all the city states.
Freaking love it.
And that is why the AI was so good at it, because they literally, the AI had so much cash at hand on high level difficulties because they had so much cash at hand that there was actually code written in that they would spend everything so that you could actually compete with them.
Wow.
Because otherwise, it was literally impossible to win from them, because they, at the end of the game, would have 70k gold laying around just doing nothing, because they were programmed not to use it, otherwise they would be too powerful.
I had no idea that was a thing. Look, everyone, if I've learned nothing in this episode, I learned that. That's insane. I will say, as much as I liked it being an economic victory, it kind of got, that's one of the things that also got a little bit of a pattern or rinse and repeat for me, was just always chucking like whatever it was, like 1,000 gold or something like that at the city states to win their favor. I have to say, I just bashed the envoy system slightly. I like the envoy system better than the cash system.
Yeah, that's fair. And the envoy system will work really well with diplomacy, so it's mm-hmm. there. It's built in. I had fun chucking money at them, because then the AI would just go and, add a little bit more, and then you'd go do that. I don't know. Maybe it was a simpler time, right? I don't know. But the envoy system will be better for diplomacy.
I like that you could put the spies there and they would rig elections. That was one of my favorite things to do.
That was cool.
Yes.
Like a good Soviet, I was always working on rigging those elections, especially, and then the strategy for me became like, oh, which states can you easily buy? Okay, well, those ones no one's competing for. Then you'd get to the states that people were really fiercely competing, and you'd put your spy there and then throw money at it and just hope you could win that way. At least that was my
strategy. That's something I kind of miss, that you can't use your spies in city states anymore.
I really wish you could. I mean, that might solve that envoy system for me, because right now I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't understand the envoy mechanic enough, but, and Valter, maybe you can correct me, but it feels to me like, do the AI get a bonus on difficulty levels to how many envoys they produce? Because it seems like they...
Not really, but they get so more culture, which means they tech up to a higher level government faster, which means more envoys.
Got it.
And also they will pick up more of the culture tax that give you a free envoy.
Got it.
So in general, they will have more envoys, but beyond that, they don't get any extra.
I see. Because like in my game last night, Peter was there and he had thrown like 3 envoys at a city state, 2 at another. And at that point, I might have had 2 envoys total. And you're right. You're probably right. It's probably all those leaf social policies that give the envoys. So I need to go for those maybe a little bit more. Sorry,
sometimes it could be worth it.
I tangented away from this awesome discussion on diplomatic victories, but I just can't wait for them to come back, and I can't wait to see what they do with the system in Civ 6.
It will be in the first expansion. There's no doubt in my mind that it will be in the first expansion.
When are we getting that, and when are we getting these new leaders that we've been promised? We are here at the end of June, and we haven't heard anything.
I think it was beginning of July what the company said that made them for Linux and Macs. I still hope that will be the date that it will be released. That's the DLC, not the expansion, of course.
The DLC. I mean, if they're following the same pattern as they did for Civ 5, then year one is going to be like DLC, year two will be expansion one, year two is DLC, year three is expansion one, year four is expansion two. You know what I'm saying.
I hope we will have it the winter sale that we will be getting a expansion, the first expansion.
Can I ask so wait, you're thinking the winter sale this winter?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. The game will be out for more than a year at that point. That is a time where many companies like to release games because of Christmas and stuff like that. So I really hope that an expansion will be done by that point.
So you're really thinking we get it in 2017 then, huh?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
The way how active they have been so far, and what they like, they know they're going to do World Council stuff like that in the expansion. So I think a lot of work has been put into that already as well. So I think it definitely is possible that we would get it this year.
Okay. I'd kind of written it off because of the E3 lack of announcement there and how they had announced other expansions at E3. So I thought that maybe them missing that, time to shine, them giving it just to XCOM. I thought that maybe we had given up on a 2017 expansion release, but I'm hopeful. I will sign up to your newsletter there, Wouter.
It will be still about 5 months away. So maybe a bit early to announce it already, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
A lot of the games that are releasing at that spectrum, like, and especially since it's only an expansion, not a full-fledged game, they will announce it close to that date.
That does make sense. I don't know. I want it. I want it. I need it. But okay, guys, we do need to get us into the minutes of the week here so we can kind of wrap this one up. Oh, one shout out to a listener that commented on my pronunciation last week when we were doing Natural Wonders. What is it? Hormiga 23 on Reddit commented on my pronunciation. Okay, I don't know how I'm going to actually pronounce this again, guys. I'm going to fail. So my pronunciation of Pio Pio Tahi. Maybe I did that correctly this time. He actually spelled it out for me. So fingers crossed that that's correct. But that is over in New Zealand.
That's how I always called it as well.
Pio Pio Tahi.
Pio Pio Tahi.
Think I tried to give it too much of a little Aztec spin there, some Nahuatl language. I actually thought it was some South American wonder at first, but I was terribly wrong. So thank you for correcting me. I definitely need that. They said just... Let's see. Oh, they actually, it said it's not the common name for it. It's usually called Milford Sound. But they said that recently they had heard someone on the Weather Channel call it by Pio Pio Tahi. Notice how I get into the weird level of saying that. But Dan, I'm going to throw this to you. Historical Minute of the Week.
So last week we talked, Kyle, about the possibility of bringing in a Civ-related Civcast Monthly Book Club.
Yes.
We're talking about that?
Yeah, I do, very much so.
I did hear that.
So that's something that I'm really keen on. And to kind of tie this all together with a couple different initiatives we have going on, we're going to be recording my Historical Minute this week, which is going to be part two of my Russia rundown, which is going to go through, the post-Peter era through to Catherine the Great and the Russian Revolution before we do probably a part three, which will be the Soviet era, just because I have too much to talk about as it pertains to that. But nonetheless, I have a book in mind for the first month of the Civcast Book Club. Is that something that we're going to be doing like on air? Is that something we're going to be doing off air? What do we think?
I initially thought off air, but I mean, if you want to tie it into your minutes, I mean, we can easily discuss how we want that to go.
So for the minutes, for those folks who are going to be listening to the Historical Minutes on Russia, there's a book I'd really like to recommend you, and it's on Catherine the Great, and it's called Catherine the Great: Portrait of a Woman, and it's by the great Russian historian Robert K. Massey, whose books I always talk about. You know, there's a lot of myths and a lot of speculation out there about Catherine, who, of course, is the Russian leader in Civ 5. There's a lot of that. And a lot of it is complete bullshit, just to be clear. Or at least largely unproven and probably unfair and somewhat sexist, shall we say.
Something, something horses.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, right? But Robert K. Massey's book goes into great detail about this, and he tries to dispel as many of these urban legends as possible. But one that he does talk about is Catherine the Great's policy of pensioning off her lovers. And so essentially, it is true that she was a woman of, we'll call it, many passions. She was a woman who did have many different gentlemen callers throughout Europe, men of high stature and men not of high stature, to be frank. Robert K. Massey doesn't really try to put a number to it, but he says it was in the dozens. And she had a policy of, if she really liked the guy but was growing tired of them, she would, quote, pension him off. And what pensioning him off was essentially is she would give him a bunch of money, a bunch of cows or horses or something like that, and a little tract of land somewhere, not necessarily in Siberia, but somewhere, you know, outside of St. Petersburg, somewhere outside of the center of court life. And she would, you know, gently suggest that he and, you know, his family or whomever else go and live out their days there in peace. This policy of pensioning off even went so far as to apply to non-Russian lovers who she had in that Crimea. So it's just one of the many kind of, you know, urban legends or theories about Catherine that are fascinating, slightly unfair, but in some cases true. And if you're looking for a great book to read about Catherine the Great, I encourage you to read that one. The book that we're going to be doing for the Civcast Book Club is going to be different, though. Mm-hmm. And I guess we will discuss that and establish it off air. I thought that maybe it was going to be something we'll be sharing this week, but we will discuss it and we will bring you that initiative likely via Reddit. Within the next couple of days, because it's almost the end of June and it seems natural to start the book club on the first day of the month.
Let's do it. That sounds like a great plan, Dan. I'm very, very excited for this. So if anyone is watching the stream here and wants to look at Catherine the Great, Portrait of a Woman, we could probably put a link to that up there too. Valter, tossing it over to you, strategy tips for this week.
I just wanted to say, like, the way Catherine shipped off her lovers, it sounded like, where did Vladimir go? Oh, Vladimir went to live up on a farm upstate or something like that.
Exactly. Oh, so is it one of those farms?
Yeah, exactly. That's how it immediately sounded to me, but sure.
It's kind of what it was.
Wow. So basically,
yes,
buried in the backyard.
I do have a strategy tip. We are continuing our list through all the Civilization VI leaders, and today we are going to talk about Salah ad-Din, leader for Arabia. Now, Salah ad-Din is the guy that has been made in this game to be the uniter of faith and science. And I think they did a really good job in that. He's not the strongest Civ in the game, but he's a very fun Civ for me to play. I really like playing him. I think he's really strong. You can go either way. You're guaranteed always with him to get a great profit. So you will always be able to go get that religion, no matter what. You can get that bonus even if you don't want to spend a lot of focus on your religious, build a lot of holy sites and just want to focus on a science victory, you can still get a lot of benefits out of your religion by using it to supplement your empire on a little bit of extra science. And with that, for example, his religious building will enhance your cities to get extra science, fate, and culture as well. So as Salah ad-Din, you probably want to change up your standard district building style a little bit more, because you also want to have, if you're going for a science victory, you also want to have a couple of holy sites in those large producing science cities, because they will produce more science as well. But compare then add a policy for your faith that you can buy campus buildings with faith as well. You can quickly build up a city from scratch into a large science producing city really, really easy. And I think that is really powerful. It's really, really strong for making him a science dominator. Quick shout out for the Mamluks unit as well, because even though it might not be top tier, the fact that it heals every turn, even after moving and attacking, that's really annoying to deal with as an enemy, but it's really awesome when you're using them. Also, the fact that the Madras, this special building for Arabia, it's really, really good. It's really nice. You should, and it becomes available earlier than the building it replaces as well. So Arabia is a very powerful science-going civilization that I personally love. I love the style of it. I love the feel of it. And if you haven't, you should play a game as them.
I love it. That's it. Those Mamluks are just terrible to deal with. Ugh. They kill
I love them.
All of my units.
They're cavalry units. They're awesome.
There you go, everybody. There's Valter's strategy tip for this week. Thank you both for all of your insights, as always. Dan, you and I are going to record that episode on Russia. Get that up for everyone, for all of our patrons on the feed. That'll be there this week. Huge shout out to our friends over at Non-Toxic Gaming. We love them. They are just awesome to interact with online and very, very supportive, bringing a much-needed dose of civility to online gaming in general. Thanks to all of our patron supporters. That's patreon.com/civcast. We love you guys. Check out the new goal up there. We want to get some more stuff up on the live stream in terms of older games. By the way, check out Steam sales. I forgot to mention this at the start of the show, but Civilization 6 is discounted right now. I think Civilization 5 is discounted 75%. We talked about that earlier, and Civ 6 does have a discount with it. So go ahead and check those out. If you don't own them, or you're missing DLC or anything that you want to get, just check it out on Steam. Take advantage of those sales. I know I've bought $60+ worth of games, so... Oh boy. Discord. Want to give another shout out. People have been asking us, hey, you don't promote your Discord enough. Well, I made it nice and easy. You can go to civcastpodcast.com/discord and you can easily find the link to it. It's just click on the big old icon and it'll take you to our server. Join in, have some fun with friends there, play some games together, you know, all that good stuff. Feel free to send us emails. That is civcastpodcast@gmail.com. The website proper is civcastpodcast.com. There you can find links to all of our shows, everything like that. There's a submission form on the Civcast page, the very bottom. People seem to like that. We'll have rolls to the new Civcast challenge up there next week, but we'll remind you then. Go follow or subscribe to our Reddit. That is civcast.reddit.com or rcivcast, whatever you prefer, and chat there, because we are digging that community and it continues to grow every week. So really, really appreciate it. Again, big shout out to all the people that have ventured from Twitter to Reddit and all the places in between for us. We love you guys. If it wasn't for you, this show, who knows where we'd be. We'd be sitting here just talking to one another on Skype. I mean, come on. But thanks to all your awesome contributions, we are here. And that kind of wraps it up for this week. So until then, just one more turn. You're listening to Civcast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.